I'd like to call the September 2nd, 2008 San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees meeting to order. The first thing I would like to do is to announce that in closed session that began at 6 o'clock, we discussed labor negotiations. I'd like the board to indicate if there is a need to change the agenda in any way. Seeing none, then we'll move to the action section, which has to do with a closed session item on August 19th, 2008. And although I will chair this, I believe Mark and I are abstaining from any vote regarding this matter. And Adrian also? Adrian participated the last time, so she's going to participate this time also, I believe. This will be presented by Dr. Valentine.
Just that the board contemplated an action related to a student expulsion at the last board meeting, and I think we neglected to provide an opportunity to report out on that action, and this is the opportunity to do so.
Okay, thank you.
I would move that we rescind board action of August 19, 2008 regarding the approval of the minutes of June 24, 2008.
Okay, we have a motion by Walt, Mr. Millar. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Mr. Unger.
I think you're premature. We need to back up a step. And we're dealing with a student discipline issue.
What date did he say?
He was dealing with the minutes.
Oh, no, we're not at minutes yet. No.
Okay, I move approval of the recommendation that the board suspend the order of expulsion imposed on student A from May 8th, 2008, as discussed in closed session on August 19th, 2008.
And that's on page one. And we have a motion by Chris Unger, and we have a second.
I'll second.
We have a second by Catherine. With Mark and I abstaining, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So that passes 5-0. And then now we're at the approval of minutes, and now
I would move that we rescind board action of August 19th regarding approval of minutes of June 24th, 2008.
Open it up for any discussion. Do we have a second?
I second, but I have a question too.
Okay, we have the two people with the most questions making the motion and seconding. So Mark first, then Adrian.
Yes. On page two, where it talks about parent Denny McKee's comments. And it says, parent Denny McKee, children commented, and I'm just trying to help Kim.
Just a little typo that I didn't catch, so that word should be omitted.
Just take out children? Okay.
Is that it? Okay. And then Adrian?
On page six, where it's the action that Mr. Millar really... He was really nice, and I want clarification on these various types of employees that we have. But really the thrust of your question was, can you review why we hire so many temporary teachers? I don't know if you wanted that clarified in the minutes or not.
Well, that actually wasn't it. All I really wanted was a definition of the different classifications.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I didn't have that underlying intent. So.
I'm glad we got that out there.
So that's just a clarification, okay. Not a correction. Okay, with that correction to the minutes of August 19th, the removal of that word is indicated by Mr. Buckman. We have a motion and by Mark and a second by Adrian. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So that passes 7-0. Next, the correspondence. There was one letter that I wanted to recognize and pass down to Ms. Hughes. The board, through me, got a letter from Julian Crocker, who's the superintendent of San Luis Obispo County Office of Education, regarding the 2008-2009 board-approved budget, in which he reviewed it and found that it met all the criteria and that it was satisfactory. And I also want to mention that he indicated in the last paragraph, sending compliments to Russell Miller, Assistant Superintendent for Business Services, and Julie Lang, Director of Fiscal Services, for providing a solid, valid, comprehensive, narrative, and detailed report. And thanks from the Superintendent of the County Office of Education, Julian Russell. And there was no other correspondence as far as I was aware of. And now we will, moving ahead to the public comment, I have one request to address the board tonight, and that's from a Lance Hulsinger. Mr. Hulsinger, is that, did I pronounce your name correctly?
That's right. Pronounce okay. Lance Hulsinger.
Okay, thank you for being here. And this has to do with the Monday late start.
That's correct. And as I distributed to the board, I have a flyer that describes the hardship that late start Mondays presents to working parents.
Is this the document, just so everybody knows?
I got it.
Since late start Mondays, three bad choices for
working parents. Yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
I got a spare.
Okay, no, we're using up your time. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I want to, that lays out the hardship on the parents. I want to talk a little bit about why this is not in your interest. One, employees are going to be late to work because they're going to be staying home watching their kids, make sure they get on the bus. You're going to lose the boosterism of local businesses that way. Two, if a parent stays home and takes time off or takes vacation time, that's 4 days, 32 Mondays in a school year. That's 4 days, and you're going to lose a lot of support. So Wednesday afternoon, if they're out early, they're going to be out playing. If you figure it out that that's just 50 calories of play as opposed to sitting in front of the TV, over about 4 or 5 years, you're talking about 10 pounds. And you want healthy kids. And you don't want, most of all, a tragedy when some parent rushing off to work leaves their little one at home because they're about to lose their job and they can't afford not to work. And some kid leaves the frying pan on, or God forbid, one of the dozens of registered sex offenders in your school trust takes advantage of the situation. And you're going to possibly wind up with a lawsuit that's going to cost the school a lot of money. Whether ultimately you'd have to pay, and you don't want your teachers to say, gee, I got to work a little early, I got to have this business meeting, but there's this tragedy because of that. And you don't want that on your conscience. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that, Mr. Hulsinger. Are there any other members of the public that wants to wishes to address the board tonight? Okay. We're going to move on to reports, and we'll start with student representatives. And I think we'll start with Katie O'Neill from San Luis Obispo High School, please. Thanks for being here tonight.
Hi, I'm Katie O'Neill, and I'm the student Congress chair and student representative for San Luis High School, like he said. And we started out our school year with a great back-to-school night. We had lots of students and parents who attended, and the Black and Gold Boosters Club provided us with a pizza party. At back-to-school night, we also had a freshman parent meeting and a college senior parent meeting, which also went really well. Along with the great back-to-school night, we had excellent news to begin our new school year. We finally reached our goal of getting over an 800 on our school's academic performance index based on the STAR testing from last year, which we were really excited about. And we are proud to join Morobe High School as one of the now two schools who have received over an 800. Our fall sports season begins the week of September 8th, and we are glad to present the board members with courtesy cards, which are at your places right now, so that you can come to all San Luis High events for free, including our upcoming sports games. And the week of the 22nd, we will be hosting our freshman career activities. And this is where counselors go to ninth grade classrooms and talk to freshmen about their school experience so far and answer any questions they may have. And on September 23rd, we will be holding our first English Learners Advisory Council. And this is where parents of English learners will meet in the library to discuss their expectations for their students for the upcoming year. Also, we have finalized the week for our school's homecoming. It's going to be October 6th through the 11th, which is a little earlier than we had planned. And we also picked out our theme. It's going to be Fractured Fairy Tales. So ASB has been working really hard to prepare for our homecoming events. And our drama department is also getting into gear by auditioning some students for their approaching events. The drama club is holding auditions for their upcoming production of The Wind in the Willows. The famed Slow High Improv Troupe is also holding tryouts for new members, and the Iamic Pentameter Club is holding auditions for King Lear. So all in all, San Luis is having a great start to a great school year.
Katie, thank you very much. And from Morro Bay High School, Matt.
Going to be impacted. So we're having a schedule adjustment Thursday, and most students are going to be starting out with new schedules then. Also, on Thursday, we have our back-to-school night at 5:45, and I'd like to invite all the board members to attend that. And on Friday, this Friday, we have our first home football game. So that's very exciting. And on the next day, Saturday, we have our welcome back dance, and the theme is blue and white. So I'd also like to announce that we also gave athletic passes to all the board. I gave them to Dr. Valentine to distribute before the meeting, so hopefully you all get those. And I'd also like to lastly just congratulate San Luis on their above 800 score on the API, and I'd like to announce that Morro Bay is also excited to have posted an 831 on the API tests. So thank you.
Thank you, Matt. So you're thanking them for joining the 800 club
exactly.
with you guys
making
over there.
Look great.
And also, Chris is going to say something, but I know the board wants to thank you both for being here tonight. We really do appreciate the information you bring, and because it goes to the public, it's also important because you're doing so much in your schools. You should be proud of it, so thank you for doing this. And then Chris had a question.
Matt, did you say the back-to-school night was Tuesday the 9th?
No, back-to-school night is this Thursday.
This Thursday. Okay, thank you.
At 5:45.
Great, thanks.
And Marilyn?
Hi, thank you both for coming. I have a question, and it might be a question that I'd like to pose to Mr. Jones, having to do with the English Learners Advisory Council. Well, I'm wondering, will there be translation available?
Yes.
At that? And also, who from your administration or counseling staff will attend? How do you foresee that working? I'm interested in.
Well, we have one of our administrators, Julie Mamo-Beckius, is the area administrator for the EL program, so she'll be in attendance. I'll be in attendance. We will have translators there, and we contact parents by phone and also by mail. And we have some kind of special activities for that first meeting as well. So we're working really hard, actually, to increase our attendance at our ELAC meetings and to involve our English learner parents and our school community.
Great. Thank you. Sorry to put you on the spot like
that.
No,
that's fine. That's easy.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. Any other questions? And Matt and Katie, again, thank you. And you're welcome to stay, but you don't have to stay because I know you guys have other things going on. But thank you for coming, and we'll look forward to a contribution for the rest of the year at our meetings. Thank you. Sure, go ahead.
I wasn't planning on staying today because I have some AP homework, but I was planning on coming to some other meetings, and if you guys have any issues that address students, I'm glad to put a student's perspective on it. So.
Perfect. Thank you for that, too.
Welcome.
We like that. Chris?
Just we really welcome your participation. I know when Joe was the representative a couple of years ago, he sat in a couple of meetings and had some points that I think were really valid and things that were real important for the school board to consider. And we always welcome that. Can't vote, but we sure want to hear what you have to say.
Okay, thank you, and thank you again. Are there any reports from staff, administrators, and members? We have Dr. Valentine.
Yeah, it's my pleasure tonight to present to the board our newest administrative hire. We haven't had a chance to welcome this gentleman publicly, but I'd like you all to...
My book, that's better than your scores.
No, our scores are pretty good. Yeah.
Well, your smile's even better. So.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, welcome. We're delighted to have you with us. Thanks for coming tonight so we know who you are. We'll recognize you, and I have it on very good authority that they are crying hard in Paso Robles. They're taking this loss. It's tough for them, but boy, wonderful for us. So thank you so much for deciding to join us.
Thanks. It's been great.
Yeah. Thank you, Gene. And no more rubbing it in, Paso Robles.
But oh, no, you can do that. Okay. I do it all the time.
Thank you. Any other? I think, Mark, were you lit up at one point?
Yeah. I'd like to take this opportunity.
So to speak. Sorry.
They're making
you
fun.
Just accused you of being lit up.
They're making fun of me, Mark. It's not you. Go ahead.
I only get lit up on New Year's. I'd like to take this opportunity to yet again urge the public to contact our representatives because we are now at a record-breaking number of days without a state budget. And I bring with me tonight their direct emails. So for Senator Abel Maldonado, if you wanted to drop him a line and tell him that we need a balanced approach to solving the budget, it would be senator.maldonado@senate.ca.gov. And our assemblyman, Sam Blakesley, would be assemblymember.blakesley@assembly.ca.gov. And, again, this is the longest we've gone without a budget.
Thanks, Mark. And it does mean something for them to receive emails. It's not fruitless. Adrian?
I noticed that we got the Morro Bay High School Pirates Press on email version this time, and I looked through that. One of my questions for Pete Zotovich, the principal, was there's no mention in there of how parents can opt out of having their children's name given to military recruiters. So I emailed him, and he assured me that that is clearly written out on the emergency card, so that parents have to fill out their information. They can check a box or whatever. And I found out that's the same for San Luis Obispo High School. And he mentioned that a vast majority of parents do not want their names given, but the federal government has found sneaky ways to buy those names anyway. Of course, they have all their surveillance and all, so. But at least the parents can choose not to have the school deliver that information. So that's good. I'm sharing an article called The Future of Creativity in Our Schools, Our Businesses, and Our Homes, just for your reading pleasure. It's in Utney Reader, which you probably know what Utney Reader is. It chooses a theme and then collects articles that have been published on that theme. But it talks about how the importance of imagination and creative child-created play, just free play. It doesn't have parents structuring it or cheering it on, or it's just completely child-driven, and how important that is for the development of the human brain and the capacity to generate thoughts and creative ideas. And it has various research references, but one paragraph on page 38 says, in Where Do the Children Play?, a public television documentary that premiered earlier this year of our schools.
Thank you, Adrian. Catherine?
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to say I was very happy to be at the San Luis High School back to school night, and Mr. Jones told me that a record number of parents turned out for back to school night, which is really encouraging to see how many parents are there supporting our students and getting involved with the administration. And the band was fabulous, and Paul Osborne sang the national anthem and just brought tears to your eyes. It was incredible. And I just wanted to welcome our assistant superintendent's son to our school district, who is now a junior at San Luis High School, Brandon. So it was great to see Mr. Miller there and also Dr. Valentine. And just want to say I'm looking forward to the Morro Bay High School open house this Thursday and Monarch Grove open houses as well. And next week, I guess we have Del Mar and Baywood. So we're going to be busy.
Thanks. Okay, thank you, Catherine. Any other reports? Next we have the report from Mr. Miller on the state budget, and according to Mr. Buckman, this may be a short report.
Hey, Mr. Buckman had it just right. There's nothing. We haven't had a peep out of Sacramento. They've had a few votes. They've had a few conversations, but ultimately there's been no resolution of the issues. So at this point, I think the best approach we can do is ask the state to present us with a budget that we can get our arms around and start dealing with some of the facts. We're going to be down the road considerably in terms of financial commitments long before we ever find out exactly what our resources are going to be. So it becomes a bit disturbing. The longer it takes, the more behind the eight ball, if you will, we're going to find ourselves.
Okay, and I think Chris has a question.
Yeah, one of the things that I read said the state funding for categoricals in certain restricted programs is part of the budget deal. Since special education is our largest categorical, are we going to be seeing funding problems with that, or any of the other categoricals that we might not be getting right now, and how is that going to affect the district?
Well, state passes a budget, I'm not quite sure exactly what the impact is going to be on us. I know that special ed has been a vastly underfunded program mandated by the state and the federal government. We've operated at a deficit of some 67 to 70% consistently over the years. I don't think that's going to get fixed. I think it's going to be a deficited program. It may even become more severely deficited than it has in the past. We're just going to have to adapt to that piece of it. The other categoricals, I see different programs floating in and out of the limelight in terms of what's available for cutting and what is not available for cutting. Once again, I think we're going to have to wait and see what ends up being the reality of the state budget.
You know, and I apologize. I must not have asked my question very well.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What I am concerned about is that without a state budget, that those programs aren't currently being funded, and is that going to affect our school district?
As a cash flow issue, or just we're going to be fine with that aspect of it. I think that we have enough in our bank account to be able to bridge through for a lot longer period of time than the state can go without doing something. The state's going to run out of money if they don't pass something great. So we'll dip into our reserves. Our current thinking is that might cost us $150,000. That's based upon the governor's May revise and some other information that school services sent out during the summer. So if we have to backfill because the state is going to cut some of its programs, we expect $150,000 more or less.
I'm just wondering from our Sacramento watchers, did the governor's threat not to go to St. Paul have any effect on the stalemate on the budget? And will he be making the trip?
He, you know, I don't know. We had an unverified report. He was at a party in Montecito on Sunday, so we're not sure what he's doing these days.
No, actually, Pete Wilson, I think, represented the governor at the convention. Pete Wilson was the one who went from the state of California.
But when he got there, he criticized the governor's budget plan. So that was a nice thank you.
Thank you, Russell, very much. The next we have a public hearing, and Ms. Delkiskamp is going to open this up for the public to be brought back, I believe. And you'll explain
yes.
that. Thank you.
Good evening. Every year we present this item, and basically what we need to ensure is that we have standards-based instructional materials for the four subject areas of English, social science, and mathematics. We also need to make sure that we provide a textbook for every student and that at grades K to 8, we have adopted textbooks from the state's approved list. And in addition, we need to make sure that we have textbooks in our foreign language classes, our health classes, and finally that we have lab equipment for grades 9 and 12, science lab equipment. So what we do is schools usually notify our department if they have shortages, but we also seek written confirmation, especially in the areas of foreign language, health, and lab equipment. And as our student representative mentioned earlier, Morro Bay High School has had an increase in enrollment, and so we have already placed an additional order for some science textbooks and for some lab equipment. And we're required to do that within the first 2 months of the beginning of school, so we're right on track. So pending the receipt of those materials I just mentioned, our district will be sufficient this year in all areas. And at the September 16th meeting, I'll present a material certification and resolution for board approval. But tonight what we have is a public hearing to allow the community an opportunity to provide you with any input before you take action at the next meeting.
Okay. Thank you very much, Rita. And I should ask if there's anyone here from the public who may wish to address the board regarding this. Seeing none, it'll be brought back to the board at the next meeting for passage. Going on to item number 4, which is a resolution that will involve an oral vote of the board. Julie Lang, thank you.
Hi, good evening. This is also a once-a-year requirement by the state for us to bring to the board the GAN limit calculations to present and for your approval. If you look at our GAN limit attachment on page 4.5, number 10, you can see that we have zero adjustments to make to our GAN limit. So at this time, I'd like to recommend that the board approve the Gamut Resolution number 020809.
Okay, thank you very much, Julie. Questions, Mark? No? Do we have a motion, Mark?
I'd like to move that we approve the resolution 020809 GAM limit calculations for 0708.
And there's a second by Marilyn. We have a motion by Mark and a second by Marilyn. Ms. Holmes?
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? Mr. Spadafore?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Dickinson? Mr. Millar? Aye. Passes 7-0.
Thank you very much. And Julie, thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you.
We're going to move on to item number 5 under the action discussion section, and this will be presented by Dr. Valentine regarding a retainer agreement with a law firm that provides special education legal services.
Yeah, I believe the board's familiar that we've received over the last several years services from Lozano Smith, the Lozano Smith attorneys at law, and specifically from one of their attorneys, a gentleman named Peter Sansom. In an amicable split and a reorganization of the Lozano Smith office structures across the state, Mr. Sansom and a couple of other Lozano Smith colleagues have branched off to form their own law firm. We believe that there are advantages to our school district to have some consistency and some long-term overview of our special education situation. And as a result, we're bringing to the board tonight an agreement to retain the services of the new law firm, which includes this particular attorney and his colleagues. The terms of the retainer, there is no charge to retain the services. It simply kind of formalizes the relationship between us. It doesn't tie us down to seeking some specified amount of services or some generalized charge for the year. It doesn't preclude us from going back to Lozano Smith for special education matters. It simply says that this is a law firm that the board recognizes as one that we can choose from to do business. The rates of the law firm are listed. They're actually a little bit less than the rates that we were paying Lozano Smith, which may be a startup incentive, but at any rate, we are recommending that we continue a relationship with Mr. Sansom and his colleagues.
Thank you, Dr. Valentine. Questions, comments, motions? Go ahead, Marilyn.
Just point of clarification, Dr. Valentine. We would continue then to use Lozano Smith for negotiations and other matters that we currently use them for?
That is correct.
So it's special ed only?
Yes, and we're not bound even to exclusively deal with Mr. Sansom on that.
Okay, thank you.
Adrian?
I think Mr. Sansom made a very good impression on the board.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Other questions, comments? Is anyone interested in making a motion at this time? Chris?
Unbalances and our detailed SACS document, which we should have as an attachment. If you look at page 6.4 of your agenda, you'll see their familiar chart. And I just wanted to point out some of the more interesting aspects of this. You'll see that our total revenue for 2007-2008 was $70,825,000. If you go down to total expenses plus transfers out, which were to our fund for retiree benefits and also to deferred maintenance fund, if you add those two together, our total expenditures came out to $70,817,000, leaving a net increase in our fund, our general fund, of $8,205, which means we spent almost exactly what we made last year, which is pretty unheard of. We had a healthy beginning balance of over $15 million and ended with a very healthy balance of over $15 million. Within that $15 million is about $3,391,000 for 5% economic uncertainties. We also have $3,066,000 that is set aside for restricted ending balances. Those will end up getting moved up into the expenditure items by first interim, or at least most of them, which will increase our expenses and decrease that fund balance a little bit. We also have our one-time carryovers in there and our unrestricted ending balances, which include lottery and mandated rebates and our mall reimbursement money, leaving an unappropriated fund balance of $3,238,000. All of our other funds ended the year with positive ending fund balances also. Most of them increased their ending fund balances. Adult ed and cafeteria funds were both able to meet their 3% reserve for economic uncertainties. And we have building funds in Fund 21 and Fund 35, where we have some ongoing projects that you're going to see budgeted in this year as well as last year. And unless you have any questions at this time, I'd like to recommend that the board approve the 0708 unaudited financial information and budget transfers.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Questions? We'll give Mark and then Walt. Okay.
I don't even have a calculator with a battery big enough to do this. But I did have one question.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the community of Morro Bay spent a lot of time and a lot of effort coming up with the money for their scoreboard. And I was looking at Fund 21 on page 6.2,
mm-hmm.
and it looks like there was an expense to the district on that.
They have probably given donations, which are received in a revenue account and then expended out of the expenditure account. So this is what was expended.
The way that worked, Mr. Buckman, is that the community donated the resources to purchase the actual scoreboard, but the engineering construction of the support foundation of that was done by the district. The original foundation and support structure was not up to DSA standards, and we discovered that when we went to do the install of the new scoreboard. So the district stepped up, took care of its responsibility, and paid for that piece of it.
So I'd just like to comment.
I think one of them was the fact that I think they wanted to increase the amount they charged for meals, which I don't think went through. We've also, I think this year, they may have a reduction, actually, to their reimbursement amount through the state.
Oh, okay. So. And that'll impact it negatively then?
Yeah, that's an estimate at this point. I don't think that's definite.
So it's nothing food-wise, programmatically, that we're seeing this change?
No, it is. Yeah. There's significant issues confronting our food service program, and not least among them are the costs of food. Energy costs have driven up the price of food faster than we can react to a price increase.
And restrictions on what we can offer?
Yeah. Then what we've done is we've made a conscious effort not to increase the prices during the 07-08 school year or an 08-09 for that matter. We're going to plow through this year, and then we're going to come to the board somewhere in December, January, February, and ask for a price increase as we get more information. As we came... Yeah, for next year, for 09-10. As we came to the board last year for a price increase for this year, we realized we just didn't have enough data to substantiate our request. So we've had significant pay increases to the workforce. So the cost of labor is up. The cost of food is up throughout the industry, throughout the economic model because of the price of energy. And then we're going to different kinds of food, which are more expensive. And they're
appealing.
Mm-hmm. No, they're appealing. we have to be very careful about the different ingredients within those foods that might make them questionable for kids. But we're presenting them as very healthy and tasty alternatives. We have fresh food that we're focusing on. Different aspects are making it more expensive to run the program. But we have enough in reserve, and we have enough of a plan for the future. I think we'll be just fine.
Thank you. That's very helpful. And then just a couple of other quick ones. Fund 53, that tax override, is that the Measure A tax override?
I don't believe so. It is a tax override? Okay. I'm sorry I wasn't here when that happened. Yes, it is.
So, and when is that going to go away? I mean, what are we going to do with the $728,000?
It goes away when we spend the money. But in the board's quest for frugality, mm-hmm. I think we're doing some very sensible planning for that money and saving it. Okay, the serious answer is that we use that for significant facilities projects, which are characterizes modernization. Okay, a good example is at Morro Bay. We're looking at four rooms which escaped modernization that now need to be upgraded because of new curriculum and other issues. So we're using the Measure A money to do that upgrade with. Right. And we did a couple of projects at Slo High last year and year before last. We've done a couple. The playground project at Monarch Grove is a good Baywood is a good example of the use of that money.
And are we still receiving revenues from that Measure
No.
A overrun?
Okay. We are receiving revenues in the form of interest earnings, okay. But that's it.
I'll yield.
You'll yield. Well, Mr. Millar yields to the representative from Ms. Dickinson.
The gentlewoman from Arroyo Grande.
Yeah, I live in San Luis Obispo. I wouldn't be here.
Is there a question in there somewhere?
Yes, there is. Oh, okay. Can we use this $762,918 of seed money for solar energy?
I'm sorry. Say it again, please.
This A money can go for solar, right? No?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just keep that in mind, everyone.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Walt, you.
And then the Fund 56, the debt service and regarding payment for buildings at Vicente, is that a shared cost that school districts in the county have for supporting that program?
Yes, San Luis Obispo shares in that. San Luis Obispo County office shares in that. We'll also be transferring some money out of our LAIF that was set aside specifically for that.
Thank you very much.
LAIF, another fund. Okay. Any other questions for Julie?
Oh, a local agency investment fund. It's like a state pool, or it's higher interest rate, at least you used to.
Okay. Questions? Julie, thank you. Is there a motion from the board?
I'll move approval of the 2007-2008 unaudited financials.
And is there a second? We have a second by Chris Unger. Motion by Mr. Millar, second by Mr. Unger. And any further comment? Hearing, seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Thank you very much, Julie. Next, we have the strategic plan update and revision regarding the English Learners Program. And I think we have a presentation by Dr. Valentine with assistance.
Yes, assistance is a little bit of an understatement. The board has identified the achievement of English learners as a critical issue in the district and has provided resources within the strategic plan to address that issue. We know that the status quo will continue to produce profound differences in achievement between advantaged and disadvantaged children. We know also that focused efforts to halt and reverse the widening gap can make a difference in the lives of children and their families. We are pleased tonight to share some of our efforts in the areas of student engagement, parent involvement, and professional development related to our children who are learning English, and we'll be pleased also to report modest but significant improvement reflected in last year's achievement scores. One continuing area for attention is the certification of teachers to teach English learners. As we note in tonight's backup, teachers are required to have an English learner certification if there's even one English learner in class. We have well over 800 English learners in the district, which calls for essentially universal certification to assure the employability of our current staff. Typically, certification is each individual's responsibility. We decide what we want to do in the profession, and we get the proper certification to do it. This certification, this EL certification, is no different in an absolute sense, but it does differ in that it applies to individuals already on the job, and the consequences for failing to do it have been spotty at best. We think the consequences will become more concrete. We, for instance, will not consider a new hire, veteran, or entry level without EL certification or the prospect of EL certification by a date certain. I suspect that filter is common in California school districts. Interestingly, that would mean that we wouldn't hire many of our own staff if they were to approach us from the outside, nor would other districts hire them if they were to leave us. We really don't want to have to question the employability of any of our staff at this time. As a result, we want to make an opportunity available to those teachers who have yet to be EL certified over the next 2 years. I want to emphasize that the majority of our teachers are EL certified. Specifically, we will sponsor the training, cover the test fees, and contribute mileage to complete the certification testing. There are more details, but that's the gist of it. We believe the training will be valuable professional development and will serve the interest of our English learners. We also believe it is a sincere good faith effort from a district which is in program improvement based upon the achievement of English learners. I'd like to note also that we're entering into a joint statement with our colleagues in the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association to support the participation of teachers who are yet to be certified in taking advantage of this offer. And I appreciate and I acknowledge Bruce Bedrigian in the audience tonight who co-authored that joint statement yet to be released. We're going one step further tonight and asking the board to consider the establishment of a specific strategic plan objective which formalizes our intent to certify every teacher in the district for service to English learners. We believe the combination of financial support from the district and board support of the specific direction and association support of the proposal will serve as a strong incentive for everyone to become certified. With that, we want to share our most recent plans and efforts and then recommend approval of the new strategic plan objective as stated in the backup.
Thank you, Dr. Valentine, for setting this recommendation in front of the board. It's our job to provide you with a context, a little background, and then hope with that context for you to be able to accept the recommendation. As you know, our school district is in decline in terms of our student enrollment. However, the number of English learners is steadily increasing. We're seeing a significant increase of 60, if not more, English learners this year in our enrollment counts. You have addressed our EL population by establishing in our local education agency plan a goal that focuses primarily on our English proficient students. We want them to become proficient in English and to reach high academic standards. That's our goal, and our efforts are in that vein. Your strategic plan over the last several years has identified implementation objectives. We have implemented support for our elementary English learners at level 1 and 2, the support of English language specialists at all of our elementary schools. At the secondary level, you've added English language development classes to ensure that our secondary students also have that support. You've supported language testing occurring in the summertime, and if I may report, this summer, 298 English learners who were attending summer school out of 416 English learners were assessed. So these students have had their annual assessment done during the summertime so that their instructional plan can be provided for them as they begin the school year. You've also provided translation services to all of our sites, and this ensures communication with our families. Last year's implementation objectives expanded to our level 3s to 5 English learners and also our reclassified fluent English proficient students. Again, you've established support services with specialists across the board. You've also continued to support Pacheco's dual language alternative with general fund money, and we appreciate those implementation objectives. Your budget history shows that you have put your money behind our program efforts, and you can see the dollar amount that you've supported our English learner program with, $650,500 over the course of the last few years. Now, I know you guys want results when you put that kind of dough on the table. And if I may, we have three major objectives for our school district. They are called, as every school district in the state has, annual measurable achievement objectives. And the first objective has to do with the percent of English learners making annual progress on the California English Language Development Test, or the CELT. As you can see, We have increased the percent of students who have made annual progress. And what this means is our English learners have increased one level of language proficiency over the course of the year or have maintained their early advanced or advanced levels. So we're seeing an increase in the percent of our students meeting that achievement mark. Our second annual measurable achievement objective has to do with the percent of English learners who have attained English proficiency on the California English Language Development Test, or the CELT. Now, this has to do with our level 4s and 5 English learners, or the early advanced students, that they have maintained their level of language proficiency and are at least at the intermediate level in their reading, writing, listening, and speaking assessments. So we're proud that we're seeing an increase in terms of the percentage there. The third measurable objective has to do with the percent of English learners who are proficient or advanced on the English Language Arts section of the Content Standards Test. Now, these data are embargoed until September 4th, so I'm not able to share with you whether or not we've realized that achievement mark. But our preliminary results show, as you can see from this chart, that our percent of proficient students on the content standards tests have increased across grade levels or are staying the same except at one grade level at the 11th grade. Now, you see our steady increase. However, if you'll remember, the target is 34% proficiency rate at each of for our students. So our percentages are not at the level in terms of demonstrating that we will be meeting this achievement level. So our challenge is still here in terms of what we have to realize in this area of supporting our English learners. We anticipate that we will continue in our program improvement status, but we've identified through our discussions in your study session that we had last spring and also in our discussions with staff that we have three main areas of improvement in the area of focusing on professional development, parent involvement, and student support. And I would like Rita Deliskamp to highlight our efforts that we've made in these three areas to date. Rita.
Okay, regarding the first bullet, which is CTEL preparation classes, this is related to that implementation objective that we have proposed for your approval. We have trained 4 district employees. 2 of our teachers are EL TOSA, or Teacher on Special Assignment, and I've also been trained in order to be able to deliver these CTEL prep classes to our teachers who need EL authorization. And the plan for this year is to offer 8 sessions for approximately 30 to 32 teachers to participate this year, increasing that number to 60 for next year. Some of the other items bulleted there. The purpose of those other professional development opportunities is to provide teachers with the knowledge and the skills that they need to systematically implement 2 basic core instructional components of an EL program, and those 2 are English language development. That's a systematic way to teach our English learners English at all levels, 1 through 5, and then also to provide access to the core curriculum and the core content areas. So all of those other bullets under there will help to address that. You see at the bottom we have K-6 comprehensive literacy training that occurred this past June. Many of our elementary teachers voluntarily participated in this 5-day training, and one of those days was devoted to English learners and how to use this model with English learners. In addition, in our administrative meetings, we've been reading research articles to inform ourselves about how to have how to create a more effective English learners program. And one of the articles we read together talked about how we can't just focus our professional development on teachers. We also need to focus it on other staff members at the sites. And that's why we are proposing for this year to offer in services, EL in services for the groups that you see listed there. In the area of parent involvement, we continue to coordinate and refine the EL services by providing information and support to school sites and EL families so that EL families and students can more fully participate in school. So such programs as the first one listed there last year, a couple of our schools investigated the implementation of that. This year we have some more implementing that project. It is the first one, Latino Family Literacy Project, is a program that helps parents to learn reading strategies and to incorporate reading in the home, and at the same time offers English instruction for them. Our adult school offers the English as a second language courses. As far as the English Language Advisory Committee and the District English Language Advisory Committee, we are going to this year provide some more resources for our site so that they may be able to deliver information in those committees more effectively. All our sites have extra parent education activities, reading nights, things like that that are open to all of our students. Our handbooks have been translated, and we made another push this year to really refine the procedures at our sites to make sure that as English learner families come to sites, they're referred to the Welcome Center, where we're able to provide them with information about the different programs we have and assist them in any way to become more comfortable and knowledgeable at their sites. And then in the area of student support, of course, one of our main goals is to provide trained and knowledgeable EL practitioners, and that includes all of our staff who can be effective EL practitioners. We want to continue our site interventions for students in need. As Dr. Matakovich already shared, before that, we had about 419 English learners attend summer school. We had about 520 register, and 419 actually showed up. And so that was good. That's more than half of our English learners in our district. And then finally, summer self-testing. We'd set a goal to test more students than the year previous, and we met that by testing 106 more for a total of 298 in an effort to disrupt fewer students' education during the school year.
So in summary, we'd like to continue our district multi-year plan, which is supported by our school site plans. We will continue to provide services to our English learners coordinated at the district level. I think Rita Delliscamp and her staff has done a very fine job in bringing the services to the site level and making sure that they are addressed by the team at the site. We plan to continue to address the needs of each student at the classroom level and to develop our staffs both classified and certificated. So with that background, we'd like to have you support Dr. Valentine's recommendation to add an implementation objective that every teacher in San Luis Coastal Unified School District be certified to teach our English learners.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Matakovich, very much. Questions for Adrian?
I don't know if I want to be first, but I think it's very important that the teachers be certified. When I got my CLAD, I did it through testing, so I decided to go that route instead of taking courses. So I bought books like Stephen Krashen's Language Acquisition Theory and read all these books, drove to Santa Barbara, took the test. but there was still a requirement to have coursework in foreign language. And I ended up taking, I took Spanish 2, Spanish 3, and Spanish 4 at Cuesta, you know, the regular weekly classes with Cuesta students, and I learned so much. And I think that is such an important part of the training, because when you're in a class like that, you realize how hard it is to learn a foreign language. Nobody can just tell you it's difficult, and it takes years. But when you have a teacher up there speaking only Spanish, for instance, and you're expected to go through the whole class and do all the homework in that language, you get up to Spanish 4 where you're reading, you know, literature, and you're supposed to write essays on that. And that's not too bad because you can use your English-Spanish dictionary and you write these beautiful essays, but then you get to class and he calls on you to talk about it, you know, and you have, it's so difficult. And you don't realize that unless you are a language learner, to put yourself in that place. So I'm sad that, it seems to me that there's a trend in education to make training for teachers less rigorous because it is so hard to recruit teachers and keep teachers. To be a special ed teacher, we had to have a different credential first. You had to have a teaching credential before you could even start, you know, getting a special education credential. You had to have 2 to become an education specialist. And I have that credential, and I was looking online to see about renewing it because I thought, now I have a master's in special ed. That should help all that coursework, and now I'm reading. It doesn't matter what your credential says, and I have the newest special ed credential because there was supposed to be like 150 hours of something or other. We don't do that anymore. You just pay your money. Pay your money when it's up, and you get your renewal because it's so hard to keep teachers and to recruit teachers in special education. And I think it's too bad that it's less rigorous. And I would like to see some language learning in the training, if you can figure out how to put that in there somehow. But I think it's very realistic and extremely generous of the district to pay all the fees and the mileage and everything. I think there's it's very generous.
Just wanted to respond and say that, you know, this is just the tip of the iceberg because really with professional development, you want to go deep. And from my experience working in another school district, when teachers receive this training, usually they want more. And part of what they want are, for example, Spanish classes, which would lead to what you're suggesting so that they're able to have some basic communication with parents.
Marilyn and then Mark.
Okay. With regard to the certification, I'm pleased that we have trained staff now so that we can offer the classes. I think that's great. There had been, I think, some discussion. It may have been something that Dr. Valentine mentioned in Monday meeting, that we are not currently a test site, but that possibly at some future date we might be able to become a test site, Dr. Matakovich?
Yeah. I've been in contact with the California Department of Ed and in turn have been referred to the Pearson Company and have written a letter to them requesting that we be considered for a site. The closest one is, I think, San Jose, Fresno are 2 sites that seem to be the closest. So we're hoping that they'll respond positively.
And if we became a test site, teachers from other districts in our area could obtain their certification. Could they take our training?
They would come and take the test.
Or just come and take
here.
The test, yes. Here.
We were asking if we could be a test site.
Okay. Would you let us know if
of
that
course.
Happens?
Thank
yes,
you.
Thank you.
Mark?
I just wanted to say I'm fairly excited about this. As we work in this district and we rely on the strategic plan and we use it in our decision making in terms of curriculum and budget, to see this kind of step coming forward is really exciting. I think it's important to remember that this is important not just to EL students, but it's important to all the students and to all the families and to the entire community. And so I just want to thank you for the work you put in, because I know this is going to help close the achievement gap. Chris?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to approve item number 7, Strategic Plan Update and Revision English Language Learners Program.
We have a motion by Chris and a second by Marilyn. Before we do the vote, is there any other questions, comments? I don't know if it's a public session. Well, I mean, the public can come on, comment on anything they want if they stood up. Okay. Would anybody like to discuss this matter from the public? Mr. Bedrigan.
Bruce Bedrigan, President, San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. The association appreciated the opportunity to work with the district on that, on this issue, on CTEL, through the meet and confer meetings that we've been having. And I thank Ed Valentine for promoting that and doing that. As far as the teacher's perspective, we still have some concerns with the testing. But we think it's the right step, and we think that's something, being a state-mandated program, that we have to be on board with this, and our teachers are willing to go ahead and do it. As far as the making it easy for the teachers, it's a pretty rigorous test. It's an all-day test. There's about 60 hours of training. The district is willing to go ahead and pay for for the teachers to be out of class for 8 days, and that's quite a bit. Some teachers are hesitant. They don't understand why they can't go ahead and do it on Saturdays and be compensated on the Saturdays. Right now they can do it on Saturdays, but they will not be compensated for that. Teachers are concerned that they have to travel to San Jose or Fresno and then pay for lodging, because it's an all-day test and they're going to have to spend the night there, and they're going to be required to pay for that lodging. But we did, we were able to agree between the Teachers Association and Central Admin that if for some reason a teacher doesn't pass this test, they go through the training, and for some reason, talk about multiple intelligences or whatever the reason is, it could be an art teacher, it could be someone else who's an excellent teacher, but just didn't pass the test, we don't want that teacher fired. We don't want that teacher let go. We think those cases need to be handled on a case-by-case basis. So we'd hope that there would be support there through the Teachers Association, through programs like PAR and other, and that the district and the teachers would work together and help that teacher get certified, maybe even that the district pays for that test again, encouraging that teacher. So there are still some concerns on this issue, but right now the teachers that I've talked to, they know that they have to do it, and they're willing to go ahead and step up and be certified. They know that it's going to strengthen their credential, and they want to do what's best for the kids too.
Thanks, Bruce, very much. You know, Dr. Valentine and then Adrian.
Yeah, I just wanted to reiterate my appreciation to the association. This was one of those opportunities that we have to work together on a common interest, and it was just something that I thought was a very productive partnership between us two, and I thank Bruce personally for that.
And I just want to mention for clarification, if there's any confusion, any member of the public can address the board relative to any issue on the agenda at any time, because it states that at the beginning of the meeting. So I don't believe that we have to mention it every agenda item, that that's the standard, because it's set forth in the education code. So that's
nice
always
to invite them, because the other ones, they might have to feel like jumping.
No, I'm not saying you did anything wrong. I'm just saying it's always the right of anybody to address the board at any time. So, and Adrian, you had another comment?
I still think we should invite them, especially on something like this, and when we know Mr. Bedrigan's in the audience too and was part of it, it seems appropriate to invite people.
I appreciate that. I didn't know that I could on any agenda. I didn't know that.
I think retaking, this is for me personally. Oh, I'm glad, too, that you confirmed that it's rigorous. It's just that the language learning part is not in there anymore, which I think is so important. But it does sound rigorous. And I don't see why, just for me personally, it wouldn't be appropriate to have retakes. I think that's just very reasonable.
I just wanted also to echo the comments of Bruce Bedrugian and Dr. Valentine about the cooperation. I think the collaboration is critical, and that's encouraging. A couple questions before we take the final vote. Is the collaboration time the teachers have being utilized also with the EL program?
Collaboration time is site-based, generated agenda items, and this is one of the areas that principals have identified with their staff to address, yes.
At each site. And then what about the Pacheco immersion experience with the other sites relative to what's being learned there, since it's more intense?
Certainly, Mr. Mayfield has shared with other principals what's taken place at Pacheco, and part of our conversations at the district level with principals is to share out what we've learned, lesson learned, and we think that as the collaboration period evolves, the teachers will be sharing with other teachers what they've learned. And right now we've had site visitations to Hawthorne School, which was our collaboration school over the last couple years, and so elementary schools have visited that site, so we see that happening.
Okay, and then the last thing is, do we have the ability and do we evaluate the students relative to which interventions seem to be helping to determine what would be best for other students, including parent involvement, to find out how many parents are involved and what interventions seem to be making a difference?
I think that we'll be constructing that as we go. Right now, what we've done is we have profiles of individual students, and so site by site, I think we'll be looking at what are those interventions that are effective. We plan to share, you know, how we're doing throughout the year, and I think coming up with an evaluation plan which could target those primary interventions would be a good thing.
Because I was thinking in the future in terms of budget issues for programs, it would be terrific to hear that these interventions are working and these are better and these something to really get down to specific.
I think so.
Okay, thank you. And I think after Rita, I think Mr. Bedrugian wanted to add something.
Just right now you asked interventions. I know, for example, the Latino Family Literacy Project has a component for evaluation to do just that, where we actually have to look at students' progress, grades, scores to determine if they're improving.
I mean, that's encouraging for me because I know the test results only are not an indication of how well a student is progressing, and I think it's glad that we're not losing sight of that. Mr. Bedrugian?
Just speaking as a parent, my daughters went through Pacheco. I still have one at Pacheco, and I just wanted to commend the board for taking a risk on a dual immersion experiment in our district years ago, because I think, as Central Admin has just shown how we are improving, those students now graduating from Pacheco are going into San Luis High and going into Morro Bay High, and those students are making positive impacts in the classes now. I mean, they're going into Spanish 3 and Spanish 4, and they're coming right in and going into these upper-level Spanish classes, and they're bridging the gap, because often you see the Hispanic students will be in one group, and you'll see the Caucasian students in another group. But these students are bridging the gap between those, and I think that kind of meshing and mixing really helps the learning, because it breaks down the groups, and the influence is being felt at the high schools. I think it's very positive, and I think it's one of the positive aspects of that program that's paying dividends now that they're in high school.
So I think that's good here. And also I would mention, if you want to see it at the ground level zero, go to the Pacheco open house and watch the families interact, the students interact in the classrooms there. It's so heartwarming. So if anybody wants to see the program in action, go to open house and watch how the families and students are interacting directly. We have a motion and a second. If there are no other comments, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Thank you very much, everybody. Dr. Matakovich, Dr. Valentine, Ms. Dalkiskamp, thank you. And Julie, thank you for the expert help with the overhead. We're into the action consent section of the agenda, and I'd ask the board to indicate if any one of the items should be pulled to indicate that. Item number 8, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item 9, approval to hire elementary class size instructional aides for 2008-2009 is to be pulled. 10, acceptance of donations. 11, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 12, approval of purchase orders. 13, approval of warrants and payroll. 14, approval of out-of-state field study trip, Future Farmers of America National Public Speaking Finals, Indianapolis, Indiana. I'd entertain a motion that we approve items 8, 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14.
I'll make that motion.
We have a motion by Mark, Mr. Buckman, and is there a second? We have a second by Chris regarding those items. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. And I think, Ms. Dickinson, you had number 9 pull.
This one looks like it's about instructional aides. And it says it has the, you know, how many students generate how many hours for an aide. But I was just wondering if, since we have some surplus, we're not really poor. This is just my idea. It seems to me that if you have a combination class, you know, with 31 students in it, you might want to aide for more than 2 hours, grades 4 through 6. I mean, is there any chance that we could move and just change 1 to 2, 2 to 3, and 3 to 4 in terms of hours that aides work? I know that would be money, and we'd have to ask Russell about it, but I think that an aide is very helpful working in those classrooms. Like 35 kids in a 4th through 6th grade, and you get an aide for 2 hours only.
Adrian, I think that's a negotiated contract item.
Okay, so we can't talk about that?
No, actually, it is not a negotiated item.
Because
this
it's
is
not
a board
teachers.
Decision.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, I beg your pardon then.
Just thought we should consider it because that's a lot of students in a classroom for a teacher with all the areas of curriculum and grading papers and behavior management and everything. And it would be nice to have a helper for, like, let's say 3 hours instead of 2 hours, for instance.
Just to think about it. Yeah, and appreciate the suggestion. I think one of the things, and it's certainly well worth considering, I think one of the things we've tried to kind of encourage from this end of the table would be not so much whether an individual idea was good, but how it stacked up against other things that might be competing for the same dollars. It's a little more involved process, but we're concerned about the fact that there are no bad ideas to fund. And so if you say, would it be better to have more aides than less, it's a pretty easy yes to say, yeah, it would, because you're absolutely right. But when we talk about the English learner issue, when we talk about the various things that come before the board, where would this rank in our priorities is a question, I think, that might clarify the board's values even more.
Well, we'd have to know how much it would cost to make that kind of a change to about it.
I was thinking in terms of that question. This is something that is beginning on September 11, 2008. So
ideally
in place. When the budget discussion comes before the board, when's that typically happen? April? Is that the time to ask for the alternatives in terms of increasing the aides and seeing what the cost would be, costing it out, so it's done in terms of the entire budget?
I'm sorry.
Well, I was just a very quick response. when we do the strategic planning process, literally dozens of ideas. I think if you ask principals, could you use more noon supervision in order to adequately cover the square footage of your playground? The answer is yes, we'd like that. Would you like more English learner assistance? And the answer is yes, we would like that. Would you like more class size aides? The answer is yes. And we cost all those things out, and then we rank them. The dollar amount isn't huge here, and so I don't think that our dreams for the school district would hinge upon whatever the board decided to do with classroom aides. But just as a matter of procedure, I think saying, is something a good idea? The answer is always going to be yes. The real question is it a better idea than what we might have done with it?
Okay, thank you.
May I also point out that this is the second year we've established them at this level. We actually increased the level at a board item last year. So we had the level, I believe it was 28, 32, and 34 on the combination classes. And so this is a decrease of class size aid adjustment from 2 years ago. So we have made an adjustment in the direction you're suggesting last year the board did.
Adrian?
Well, since we aren't talking about a lot of money, and it does impact, I think, significantly the achievement of students. I think, and we have some surplus. It's not like we have to take something out to maybe fund it. I think it's interesting to just explore the idea.
You know, I'm not sure what that means. If it's a motion or... Mr. Millar.
I guess I have a bit of a problem with pulling off the consent agenda, cherry picking an item, and then kind of having an ad hoc discussion about, oh, why don't we spend a little bit more? And I would move approval of item 9.
Motion is made. Is there a second? Second by Chris. Discussion? You know, in terms of the item, I think that it's important. I agree. But I think there has to be some means of doing it in relationship to the entire budget so you can have that discussion. I think you run the risk of having piecemeal discussions each meeting or at several meetings. So I think there's got to be some structured approach to all budget items. That's my
concern. Well, I think that's fine. And if you want to bring it up at the budget time, that's fine with me. I'm glad I brought it up so that maybe you'll remember it. And, you know, we can pull anything out of here and discuss it. We're not just rubber stamps for the consent. I know you know that's true because you pull things all the time. So I think it's okay to talk about ideas.
So I'm not a rubber stamp or I am a rubber stamp. I'm confused.
Well, just think about that, too. That's a good thing to think about.
Anything is subject to discussion. You're right about that. So we have a motion by Mr. Millar, and we have a second by Mr. Unger. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Now we're on to – I know. You did. I got you.
Okay.
Now we're on to the advance agenda items. And there was a request by Ms. Dickinson, seconded by Catherine, about calendaring, scheduling the benchmark testing events agenda item, I think, if I'm correct. Moving that from not yet scheduled to schedule. So all that's up in front of the board.
Shall we speak to that, or are you asking us to speak to why?
No, I'm just saying that was a suggestion that be moved off the not yet scheduled to a scheduled item, and I think at some point we have to hear from the administration about timing and when.
Well, would October meet the board's needs?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
And then Walt has a comment, then Catherine.
I just have a question. Is this one of those things that is grandfathered in prior to our new procedure?
Yeah, I asked that last meeting and was told that they are grandfathered in.
Okay. I'm a little vague on what it is, but I guess I'll find out.
I love that term, the grandfathering. Catherine.
This is actually about a Friday packet request.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry. And it relates to the gentleman who spoke to us earlier today about late start Mondays. And I guess I'd like to just say that I'm assuming I'm not the only person who's been approached on the board by parents about their concerns about late start Mondays, and I feel the need to have a Friday packet address two issues in that regard. I know the district has taken some measures to try to alleviate some of the problems to parents, and I think we should all be clear about what those things are that have been done so we can respond to parents who bring the concerns to our attention. I also think that we have an opportunity that for the district to offer some leadership to replace some programs in the morning that might also help this problem, which I think is a legitimate problem for some parents who must be at work and don't know what to do with their children and want to avoid driving them and having the bus. And I think it can fall to parent groups, PTAs, booster clubs, and individual parents, but it may require some district leadership to organize through the sites, through the principals. What comes to mind are great enrichment programs that are out there that we often don't have the opportunity to initiate at our schools because after school is so busy, the school day is so full, we don't have the opportunity to do things like junior great book programs, which is a reading club for kids that introduces them to critical thinking skills and reading groups that typically in schools that offer these are offered by parents who are trained at one- or two-day workshops to be facilitators. And so they step in the place of a teacher at a morning time program like we have an opportunity to offer now with our Late Start Mondays. So I would ask the district or the administration if you could help us by giving us first some things we can say to our parents who are concerned about this, but also start to lead us in a direction where we might be able to offer the schools some ways of organizing their parent groups to offer some of these programs, great books, breakfast language clubs, French clubs, Spanish clubs, some Spanish enrichment programs, you know, the newspapers. You know, there are a lot of things we could possibly do, and I think they just require a little organization. And I know that Mark and John were a part of a discussion we had when Dr. Matakovich brought the arts community people to us to talk about how we could partnership with some art groups in the community to offer programs, Youth Symphony, Arts Obispo, et cetera. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Catherine, just a question. Are you also asking in the Friday packet that we be advised of what questions and issues have been raised by parents regarding the Late Start Monday and what the programs are at present, just to let us know
what
the status of the situation is at from all the sites?
Yes, I think that'd be helpful. I think we're a little bit aware of what the parents' reactions have been, but if there's something we're not aware of, that'd be helpful. I know there we have offered some because we stepped in because of the park department wasn't able to offer enough child care. And I know we've stepped in to help with that problem. Mm-hmm. So if we just had more information about that.
Okay.
And then the second part of it being what more could we do and how could we all participate in that?
Great. Thank you very much. Does that sound doable there?
Be happy to do that.
Okay, great. Thanks, Dr. Valentine. Do we have any other agenda items that need to be addressed at this time? Seeing none. I think we are safe to adjourn. Thank you, everybody. Thank you very much for coming.